Welcome to Light in the Land, where we illuminate the Bible within the context of the land of Israel. Each week, we uniquely dive into biblical passages using archaeology, history, geography, customs and culture of the biblical period, and the Hebraic background of Jesus, guiding you along ancient paths and into biblical towns and landscapes is Dr. John DeLancey. He serves as the founder and director of Biblical Israel Ministries and Tours, and has led over 90 Israel study trips to date, as well as participated in many archaeological digs. We pray this program connects you to the land, deepens your understanding of the Bible, and inspires your walk of faith in Christ.
When we travel to Israel, we gain impressions as we stand at biblical sites and look at regions in the Bible, and we gain a perspective that really, it's hard to describe. We gain an impression of a biblical connection. And that's what we're going to, again, continue to talk about today here in episode 46 with Pastor Chris Blanch from the state of Maine. Welcome back, Chris.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I enjoyed the last one. Looking forward to this.
Yeah, we just posted Biblical Impressions 1 just last week, and we're happy to share it again. Chris is a board member here at Biblical Israel Ministries and Tours, and Chris has joined me for a couple trips already, and we have one planned together as we'll co-lead another trip in February of 28. If you're interested in joining that, it does have a very unique extension, an option to Sinai in southern Israel. That will, Chris, give us a great impression of some other biblical history that happened early on with Moses and the Israelites. But today we're going to actually look at five more images, and we're simply going to talk about maybe a first impression that we gained, or maybe a biblical impression as we make a connection with the text of Scripture. So as we travel to Israel, we're inviting you to travel with us today, as we again begin this episode or podcast number 46. Pastor Chris, we're going to begin with a view from the top of the Old Testament tell of Beit Shan, looking down at the Roman site. Now, talk about an impression. I personally think, and many others do, that this is probably the most impressive archaeological site in all of Israel, just because it's very, very large. I assume you remember when we climbed to the top of this site and looked down to, we see the colonnaded street, the Roman stadium, of course, the Agora, there's bathhouses over to our right. What an amazing view of a very extensive archaeological discoveries here at Beit Shan.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree that it is probably the most impressive archaeological site. It's funny, we could actually spend the whole episode, I think, just on this one particular site. There's just so much to see in this place. But again, you mentioned this picture was taken from the top of the Old Testament site of Beit Shan, and looking down into, I guess it was Scythopolis. Is that
that's right?
Mm-hmm. Called Scythopolis. So one of the cities of the Decapolis at the time of Christ. And am I correct in remembering, John, this is the only city of the Decapolis that was to the west of the Jordan?
That's right. Yep. Of the 10, only one on the west side.
Yeah. It's an incredible site. Again, Old and New Testament connections. I think the thing that I remember here, it was actually not taken where we're standing in this picture, but actually coming into the site and looking towards the tell of the, where this picture was taken from, the Old Testament site of Beit Shan. And you talked to us about, you know, King Saul's body being brought here and being hung from the walls of the city. And you know, John, you always mentioned that there, you know, the Lord's got something. When you travel to Israel, the Lord is going to do something in your heart in the land of Israel. And he does. And this, my first trip, I hope I don't talk too long here, John. My first trip, when I came with you here, I had just stepped into the role of the lead pastor. I had been a youth pastor for years. And I was nervous. I was, God, are you sure I'm up for the task here? I'm not sure that I'm ready for this role. And I remember being with you. Actually, you took us to Mount Gilboa first. And from Mount Gilboa, where Saul died in battle. And then you brought us here, and then you talked about his wall, you know, his body being hung on the walls of this city. And here's, I guess, my big takeaway, biblical impression, that this is what God was doing in my heart. You know, Saul was this king who started so well. Maybe you know, the humility that he demonstrated at the beginning, he wasn't sure he was up for the task either, to be the king. But he ended so, so poorly. And that pride filled his heart. And all I can say is when I visited this place of Beit Shan and just pictured Saul's ending on this, the walls of this city in front of us, is God, I don't want to just start well. I want to finish well. I don't want pride to ever fill my heart and do what it did in Saul's life. But yeah, I'll Gilboa and Beit Shan are firmly etched in my heart. Amazing site.
And just to think, this site was excavated through the help of many unemployed people here at Beit Shan back in the, I think, late 80s, early 90s. So much had been uncovered, especially the Roman side of things, that massive theater, very impressive, even a public latrine. Saul is connected here. This is 1 Samuel 31 and 1 Chronicles 10, I believe, where his body was brought after he died on Gilboa. In fact, you can see Gilboa in the top right corner, at least part of that mountain range. But this is where it happened. The biblical impression of reading our Bibles in the place where these things occurred is really remarkable. I have to say one of my favorite regions, I love the Galilee, of course, and many people do, but I love the Judean desert. In fact, this view of the Wadi Kelt is just a specific area of the larger Judean Midbar. Midbar is the Hebrew word for desert. Does get some rain. You can see actually some green. So this tells me that this picture is from the winter months. Usually this is just all brown, but a beautiful view of Wadi Kelt. David spent time here. Of course, Jesus was tempted in here. John the Baptist is connected there with spending time in the desert and, of course, in the Jordan Valley. But a biblical impression is how Isaiah, in chapter 40, this is the passage that comes to my mind when Isaiah says, prepare the way for the Lord, make straight a highway for our God. Preparing the way in the desert. And of course, John the Baptist would fulfill that role. He would play the role or assume the role of Isaiah in preparing the world for Yeshua, the Messiah. But just how David, for instance, would spend time here centuries before, of course, Jesus and John the Baptist arrive on the scene. And this region of Israel, just to the east of the hills of Jerusalem, the hill country of Judah, it's a desolate place. And yet David would write, lead me to the rock that is higher than I, in Psalm 61, I think. And in a dry and weary land where there is no water, Psalm 63. It's a barren place. Even Jeremiah is connected to this site. when he's asked to go and hide a belt in this very desolate region, even though just to the east of Jerusalem, the rains oftentimes don't make it across the ridge. So this area does stay quite barren and rain-free, if you will, most of the year. But what a biblical impression of this barren region. Chris, what are your thoughts when you stood here overlooking the Celt for the first time?
Well, so it's hard for me not to remember. I feel like we had a visit from Isaiah while we were here. If I remember correctly. John, for me, so I, you know, I grew up going to Sunday school, and I'm from the state of Maine, as you already alluded to. So we have wilderness here. And so I grew up with this impression in my mind of Jesus going out into the wilderness. Growing up in Maine, I pictured the Maine wilderness, you know, lots of trees. And I when we visited Israel, I'd long since been corrected with that image in my mind, but to see it, but to really see just how rugged, rough, I mean, what you don't see in this picture, at least my first trip, we went in June. Wow, how hot this place is. And to think of Jesus, you know, in the wilderness 40 days, I mean, my goodness, it is incredible. You also, I think you took us down onto the Wadi Celt path again. This such a common path from Jericho up to Jerusalem. And, you know, so, you know, this path that Jesus would have traveled many times in and out of Galilee, or, you know, even as a young child with his parents going up to the temple, just the thought of traveling up this road, or, oh man, the story of the Good Samaritan, all of these places coming to life as you're down in this area, it's incredible.
It's just not one impression that we gain standing out of sight with this view, but many. From the Bible, it just comes and floods us with providing context. But that's a great reminder of how the main road from Jericho to Jerusalem came up right through here.
Yeah,
that would have been an ascent of over 4,000 feet. So, talk about people walking a lot and long distances. That really comes to mind. But take. In contrast to that barren picture of the desert, the Midbar, with the lush Shvelah. The Shvelah is a Hebrew word. It means lowlands. And if you just retrace, if you can see my small mouse retracing the Valley of Elah, it's called. It's a little wider here, as you see, and then it narrows in between this green hill and that further hill to the south. It's a very narrow valley there, and then it widens out again, and it narrows once it bends around one more time at the foot of the hills of Judah. So we are west of the hills of Judah in the Shvelah, and we're looking at one of the five primary valleys of the lowlands, the Elah Valley. However, probably, Chris, the one of the most impressive stories, as we learned as a child, actually took place here. You care to share that story with us?
Sure. I mean, this is the this is the location for David and Goliath, and thankfully, having gone here now with you twice, the first time when I was with you, you took us to a site. I don't know that I could pinpoint it on this picture, but I'm sure you could. Soko, is that correct?
Right there, Soko, right there.
And that's my understanding. That's where the Philistine army was camped.
Probably on this ridge here. Ridge. It says between Azekah and Soko. So probably you're right. Right there in that area of Soko, and perhaps extending on this ridge as well. Yeah.
And then our second trip, we were actually right where this picture was taken from Azekah.
Mm-hmm.
So having, you know, visited, to see the valley from two different angles was a real privilege. Remarkable location. I would say that one that most people on our trip, when we brought our church, this is a place that was really, deeply meaningful for people on our trip.
Just to think David came from the hills. Bethlehem is tucked up there on the horizon. I can't see Bethlehem, but it's almost due east from here. Not quite, but he came down with the care package for his brothers, and what confidence he displayed as he told King Saul, "Hey, you see that giant? I can take care of him. I have confidence in the Lord." And maybe the battle took place, as the Hebrew Bible suggests, in the narrow part of the valley. It could very well be here. And as you mentioned, Chris, if the Philistines camp at the area of Sukkot or in this ridge here, perhaps there's good reason to believe that maybe the Israelites camped on this side of the valley. And the battlefield was that very narrow strip of the valley in between these two ridges. And what an impression of David here.
Yeah, you know, something else, John, that you shared when we were here, and I think, again, this one picture may not capture it fully, but just, you know, the proximity of like Gath, where
yeah,
Goliath is from. I mean, it's not far from here. And just when you're there, again, you just start to get a sense for the proximity of these different places. That really stood out to me as we visited the Shvelah.
We're looking east here from Azekah, but to the west of Azekah, maybe 5 or 6 miles, is Tel Asaphi, which is where Goliath was from. So yes, proximities, as I always teach, that's context. Proximities matter in terms of distances, how far these Philistines were, or maybe I should say how close they were and lived in proximity to the hill country and where the Israelites were.
Sorry to belabor the point on that one, John, but
yeah,
one other thing that, again, when you talk about the proximity of how close or how far they were, and how important controlling the different hills were along these valleys. And that was really helpful for me as we, in our previous session when we talked about Beit Shan, and we talk about these important cities and where they were built along these valleys. Because you control the valleys, you control the movement of armies.
Right. Exactly.
So that was really helpful in understanding why places were built where they were built. And you really pick up on that when you visit a place like the Elah Valley. You can see why controlling these valleys was so important.
Maybe next trip we'll have to make our visit to Kayafa. Here, but Kayafa, it's hard to get there now because even though they put a new dirt road in, we used to do that with the bus, but now the branches are too high and they scraped the side of the bus. So, in fact, you can see right there as the beginning of this, and it sort of ends up in this area here, but maybe we'll have to take some small chainsaw or some tree trimmers or something so that we could get yet a third perspective of the Elah Valley. But
great.
Let's head north. Again, a couple minutes here at an amazing site called Magdala. Can you imagine, even though it's mentioned only once, Matthew 15, at the end of chapter 15, Jesus sails into Magdala, Magadan, it's said in our English Bibles, but they found just under a little over a foot of dirt and debris this amazing first century synagogue. Mm. Your first impression?
Wow. I mean, the fact that, I mean, we know that Jesus taught in the synagogues around Galilee, that this is a first century synagogue.
Yep.
You know, that table in the middle, that was discovered here, that where the rabbi would place the scroll, to teach the people, you know, just to know that More than likely, this is a location where Jesus would have walked into this very synagogue in his time around the Galilee and would have taught the people here. It is amazing. I mean, right at the bottom of this picture, you see this mosaic. I mean, on the floor, and that there was a cabinet that would have been kept up here where the scrolls would have been kept. And then to bring the scroll out, laid on the table, and have people seated around these benches around the outside to hear Jesus teach. To be there, it's incredible.
And maybe the impression that people get when they visit is that, number one, they don't realize that a synagogue, at least in the First Temple period, and later on in Talmudic period, but they were either squarish or rectangular in size, so people actually saw each other faces. They didn't sit like in a row or a pew like we do today. But the second impression that blows people away is that look how modest it really is. The stones are still there. They're, of course, moved a little based on probably the movement of the earth the last 2,000 years, but pretty well preserved. I mean, really well preserved, but what, 50, 60, 70 people, maybe, at most, if you use the outer ring of this. But the first two benches around the smaller inside part, 30, 40 people. They're a very modest synagogue, and yet Jesus, when we read about him teaching in synagogues around the Galilee, he would have taught in this context. He would have taught the kingdom here at Magdala. And just to think that Mary Magdalene was also from here. So a very, very impressive and yet a modest discovery, but impressive in the connection that we make with Jesus. And last but not least in this episode, we'll conclude with another adventurous experience. How can you even describe your impression of an archaeological discovery that was at the end of the 1800s, a 1,710-foot tunnel cut out of bedrock with chisels mentioned in the Bible, Hezekiah's tunnel. What can you say about this, Chris?
First of all, obviously, you know, and I think you talk about this a lot, John, about how archaeology confirms the biblical account. Yeah. You know, hundreds of years ago, people, you know, we didn't know exactly maybe where this tunnel was, or, you know, is it an exaggeration, you know, all these things. But archaeology, when it catches up, always confirms the biblical account. And just this tunnel that Hezekiah had to bring the water in as, you know, the Assyrians were coming and pressing in. But this, the hand of God, I mean, the hand of God leading these people, I mean, maybe you could probably talk a lot more to the engineering feat that we're looking at here. I remember you talking about the pitch, the drop in pitch of this over, you said 1,700 feet, right?
Yep.
It drops how much?
Just 2 meters or 6 feet.
It's just incredible. And it's a winding, again, you don't see that necessarily in this picture, but this is a winding path in the bedrock.
Underneath the city,
Under the city, and that you had two teams digging, and they met. It is terminating down at the Pool of Siloam. It is remarkable. Just the fact that we can walk through it today, and that is incredible.
That's amazing, yeah. Although this last January they actually had to close one. It rarely happens. My group was really disappointed, but it was closed because of some runoff water into it. I don't know. That's what they say. But can you imagine walking through something built 2,700 years ago? And the impression, again, I like how you phrased it, until archaeology catches up. I mean, that's really how it works. The Bible, of course, stands firm. It records all these historical happenings, how Hezekiah built up the walls and the towers of the city. He built this tunnel to divert water safely down to the southern end. In fact, another episode could just include the area of what is called the Siloam Pool now. Maybe what has been found recently, a dam that, again, initially is dated to the 9th century, but maybe we'll find out that that was a dam that maybe should be rather connected to the 8th century in Hezekiah, a dam that maybe was a part of a small reservoir pool that collected the water. But again, that's a topic for another episode. But impressions, that's really what happens when we travel to Israel, when we understand the Bible in context and take a look at the archaeology, the history, the geography, like the Ala Valley. It all falls into place. So I appreciate you sharing your impressions, Pastor Chris. Any last word before we bring this to a close?
Yeah, I mean, just what I said in the last episode, obviously, if you have an opportunity to travel to Israel, or any of the biblical lands, I know that Dr. John leads trips not just to Israel, but to other locations as well, Egypt and Jordan, other locations. Whether it's with Dr. John or someone else, if you have an opportunity to go, highly encourage you to do so, to connect the dots. I think you use that phrase a lot,
yeah,
but connect
yeah.
the dots between what we read in the scriptures and what these places where these things really happen.
Because what really happens is what we encounter all the time. Biblical impressions result in changed and transformed perspectives, number one, but more importantly, transformed lives as we strive to be disciples of Christ in every way. So thanks to Pastor Chris for joining me in this episode, this podcast. And again, we are so honored for you to either watch in on our YouTube channel here or simply listen in. If you are doing the latter, listening in, we do provide this PDF of the images that we did share in this episode. Visit our website and go to the podcast page, and you'll see it all there, even past episodes that are preserved on that page. So thanks again. We are honored that you're joining us and certainly feel very appreciative of that fact. So that brings us to a close of this episode, and I hope that you join us for new episodes in the near future. So as we always say, until next time, Shalom.
Thank you for joining us for this program. We hope it was enlightening and inspiring. If you have questions, you can email Dr. John DeLancey at drjohn@biblicalisraeltours.com. We invite you to visit our website, biblicalisraeltours.com, where we have resources about Israel and the Bible, select images from today's program, along with links to our YouTube channel featuring on-location teaching videos from the land of Israel. Additionally, our site also has information about upcoming trips throughout Israel and other biblical lands. A tour of the Holy Land will transform the way you read and understand the Bible, as it has for thousands of others. Until next time, thanks for listening, and Shalom.